talk while I follow you.
Now 9 p.m. right here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's time for the end of From the Basement. I'll hand it off to the Mockster. We're going to plan to rerun this interview next week due to some travel. So if it's not January 23rd, it's probably January 30th, in which case we'll be back with a fresh show first Friday of February. As I've mentioned before on this show, sometimes I'm live in the studio, sometimes I'm not, because WRCT has seen it fit to send me on a mission to the East Coast to figure out if there's any good music in New York to bring back in to you folks in Pittsburgh, or any good music in Boston other than DJ Lucas, the Pixies, and well, I'm sure there's more. And on a preview, I have found good music in New York to bring back to you, including a tale of meeting not one, not two, but three known people. All right, that's it. I'm getting cut off. Leave you with the Mockster. See you next week.
You're now listening to The Underscores on WRCT Pittsburgh during Massive Music Weekend.
Machinery, catharsis, ragtag, transcendence, tryhard, high strung, erotic, blue cross, golden arches, pearly gates, supermarket, interstate, fence, domestic, citizens arrest, two-state name, gas station, phantom pain, therapist, shell white, parking garage, micropolitics, private property, killing point, agenda, arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bone, sinew, good luck, arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bone, sinew, good luck, arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bone, sinew, good luck, arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bone, sinew, good luck, arms, body, legs, skin, bones in you. Arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bones in you. Arms, body, legs, flesh, skin, bones in you.
I've done the questionnaire like 700 times to get the same results as my friend. We've been inseparable since 2009. She just doesn't know about it yet.
Can you feel it?
Good luck. I've done the questionnaire like never in my life, but I've got a 10-foot pole. And if I could, I'd poke her with it right between the eyes. Make progress through slow.
Can you feel?
Stop me.
had this one before. Girls like us are rotten to the core.
Let's go!
We don't give a fuck.
Start running out of mileage. Can't sleep 2 a.m. I don't really mind it. Ring, ring, pick it up. I could be a psychic. Fake smile, run it back. Guess I never tried it. OC, double dose off the psilocybin. Ring, ring, pick it up. I could be a psychic. Socks, 2014 cliche. I'm bored, oxcore. Let me be the DJ. We're so right about everything that we say. We're so cool. Mobile on the freeway.
And I've been eating toothpaste, 'cause you give me toothaches. And this could go two ways now. I think you drank my Kool-Aid, and I've been up for 2 days. Why are the things that you say always in my mouth?
Superstar running out of mileage. Can't sleep 2 a.m. I don't really mind it. Ring, ring, pick it up. I could be a psychic. Face smile, run it back. Guess I never tried it. OC, double dose off the psilocybin. Ring, ring, pick it up. I could be a psychic.
motion gets low.
I hear you go.
If I'm the queen of the scarecrow, I wish you guys.
Thank you.
making it work with what I've got. If I go for it, I might forget that you're there.
Sing a sad song. Yeah, I live for the attention. I got a problem, it's not my fault. Why would I pay it any mind? I'm a pop star, baby, pop star, baby. All I wanted was a mention. Yeah, I guess I must have pissed you off. Why would I waste my f***ing time? I'm a pop star, baby.
Thinking about a little something, something in my septum and a couple tattoos.
It's been really nice to know you. Stick around and I'ma do my worst. What the hell did you expect? I'm a pop star, baby, pop star, baby. I'm the one you sold your soul to. And I'm thinking it's about my turn. And I talk about myself like a pop star, baby.
Criticize a little something, something that I did because somebody had to.
Yeah.
Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we get a crash course about the true nature of tariffs and the potential economic impact of another war under the Trump administration.
Economist Rick Wolf returns to the show to speak on these topics and just how volatile the war against Iran is becoming.
We'll then get another perspective on the war against Iran from Marjorie Cohn.
Professor Emerita Marjorie Cohn will also give us updates on the naval blockade in Cuba and the subsequent results of the fuel shortages there.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm Jim Lafferty, a decades-long political activist and once the national director of the National Lawyers Guild.
Trump did not deliver the traditional State of the Union address to the American people and Congress. Instead, for nearly 2 hours, he hosted what amounted to be a MAGA campaign rally. Trump's approval rating is under 40% and sinking, especially now with the war that he started against Iran. The two uppermost concerns of the American people are their increasing economic difficulties and their opposition to ICE and its reign of terror in major American cities like Minneapolis, Chicago, and Los Angeles. He put both forward as huge successes. Trump has secured a budget of billions of dollars to fund ICE, which has more money going forward than in the combined budgets of all the state and local police departments in the country. And the Department of Homeland Security is either building or leasing space for huge detention camps across the country. Trump has issued National Security Presidential Memorandum Number 7, NSPM 7, which targets critical thinkers. NSPM number 7 was then supplemented by a list of laws by Attorney General Pam Bondi, where she indicates that they'll be used against these disobedient critical thinkers and activists. Joining us today is University of Massachusetts economics professor emeritus Richard Wolf. He last appeared on Law and Disorder 7 months ago. Professor Wolf contributed to our book, From the Flag to the Cross, Fascism, American Style, published by Ohr Books, and is active with the program Democracy at Work. The New York Times says that Professor Wolf is, quote, probably America's leading Marxist economist. Professor Richard Wolf, a hearty welcome back to Law and Disorder Radio.
Glad to be here.
Rick, let's begin by talking about the state of the American economy, taking in the fact that the American-Israeli regime began what looks like a catastrophic and probably a long war against Iran just last week. What's your take on how it's going to affect the American economy?
Well, at this point, my best guess would be that it'll be bad for the American economy, and the longer it lasts, the more bad it will be. We are in the middle, people should remember, of a war in Ukraine, which has used American weapons more than any other country's weapons, maybe perhaps the Russia's, but certainly an enormous amount of our weapon supply has been used up. we are making noises, or at least our government is, bombing Nigeria, snatching the head of Venezuela, threatening Cuba, and I could go on. But, you know, fighting any war, if it's your only war, is hard. Fighting multiple wars is usually harder. And so you'd have to be kind of desperate, and that's probably a good word to keep in mind in our conversation today, to undertake yet another war when you're already involved in multiple wars. And that would be a hard thing to do economically, militarily, and of course also politically, since the man in charge who makes the decisions ran a campaign promising no more war. It's particularly difficult for all of that. As to the status of our economy, it is extremely fragile. Let me give you the basics. We have a severe problem of economic inequality. Huge number of economists who don't agree on many other things will agree, as by the way the polls of the American people agree, that the inequality in the United States today, by which people mean mostly inequality of wealth and income, but to that you could add the inequality of real political power, is unhealthy and unsustainable. If that's the case, you're looking at an economy which not only has that problem, but is doing exactly nothing to solve it. Now, to be fair, Mr. Biden didn't do much to solve it, and the previous presidents neither. Economic inequality has become worse steadily over the last 70 years. It's as if the New Deal's result for the United States was the last 75 years characterized by a systematic program of rolling back the New Deal, bit by bit, legislation by legislation, money supply by money supply. That's what it has been doing. The charge to do it was led by the Republicans. It always is. They did it the most harsh and rough way. The Democrats, however, proved to be really no different. They just did less of it. They didn't do it quite as quickly, and they didn't do it quite as harshly. And that meant that the working class opted for the Democrats until the failure of the Democrats to do hardly anything to slow it down meant that many people in the working class decided to abandon the Democratic Party one way or another. And that put it in the doghouse and made it possible for someone like Trump to become a president. But nothing Mr. Trump has done is going to solve the problem. I'll give you just one or two examples. One of the rationales that he ran his campaigns on was that the United States has been losing manufacturing. That's true. We have been for half a century, if not more. Okay. What is he going to do about it? His answer was the tariffs. And even before the Supreme Court ruled them unconstitutional, the tariffs were a failure. People should understand that we've had about a year now of tariffs, more or less. And over that period of time, the number of manufacturing jobs in the United States dropped by 75,000. I mean, that is a stunning number. It's not that the tariffs failed to give us a big increase in manufacturing jobs. And it's not even that it gave us no increase. It actually worsened the situation in terms of manufacturing jobs and all that that implies, which is why it became a big issue for both Democrats and Republicans. Neither in his first term, nor in his second term, neither in his taxes, nor in his tariffs, did Mr. Trump do anything to solve either the inequality problem or the manufacturing. And I could go on, but it is a very, very fragile, poorly functioning economy that is now going to be burdened. And I'm talking about real burdens from an additional war, which the country, frankly, cannot afford.
Well, Rick Wolf, speaking of tariffs, Trump just doesn't want to give up on it, does he? He says tariffs that he initiated without congressional approval as required are nevertheless going to generate so much money that they could possibly replace the income tax. Who pays these tariffs? And do you believe they could possibly replace the income tax?
No, in fact, I make a prediction. I don't believe in prediction, but I'm going to make a prediction that future textbooks of economics will have a small chapter in them devoted to the lunacy of the tariff program of Donald Trump as a kind of case study students should read because it'll give them a clear idea of what not to do. So let me answer your question. A tariff is a tax. Nobody should have any doubt about it. It's just the name of a particular tax. And what's particular about it? The tax is applied to any good or service brought into the United States for sale but produced outside. So if you drink French wine, then you're bringing a product produced in France over here to be sold and consumed. But the payer of the tax is the American company that brings everything from abroad in. You know, all the companies that stock your local liquor store where you might buy that French wine. The importer pays the tax. Now, the importer may not want to be stuck with a tax. That's typical. And may decide that the way to handle the situation is to jack up the retail price that you and I pay by whatever the tariff is, so that in the end we pay it rather than the importer. But it's either an American company importing or an American consumer retail buying who picks up the cost. And recent research has proven exactly that. The Kiel Institute, which is a globally recognized German research outfit, did the math and came to the conclusion, get ready, 96% of the tariffs imposed by Mr. Trump so far have been paid for, you guessed it, by Americans. The clever thing Mr. Trump did, and clever is something he actually deserves credit for, the clever thing was by calling it a tariff, he obscured that it was a tax. And by saying the tariff is, I'm going to hit China with a tariff, I'm going to stick it to the Canadians, he gave the impression that the tariff was something paid by those foreigners. And so you Americans, to whom he had to go to get the taxes paid, he was trying to fool you doubly by not admitting it was a tax and by suggesting it was a tax that would be paid for by foreigners. And those statements are both stone cold lies. I mean, there's just no way to justify what he's doing. But it was clever if you think about it. The Republican Party has made its name in American society by being the party against taxes. It's been doing that for over a century. If there is a tax, they're in favor of obliterating it, canceling it, or lowering it. And they never propose more taxes, unless, of course, it's on the average person. And then they lie about it and say it's a tax reform or some other verbal noise. So they had this problem that the Republican Party, by endorsing Trump's tariffs, was basically breaking with its own history, a history in which it is the anti-tax party. And that tariff was a big, fat tax. Now, let's be clear. Before the tariff tax was passed, we had what Mr. Trump called the big, beautiful tax bill of early last year. That bill gave an enormous tax cut to corporations and the rich. And Mr. Trump's advisors calculated by giving a big tax cut to corporations and the rich, Well, then they wouldn't complain so much when a little later you hit them with a tariff, because basically they would come out neutral since they had gotten a nice cut before they ever had to pay the tariff. Wrong. Republicans hate taxes no matter what they're called, and hate them no matter what they are or when they're contextualized in this manner. Now, Mr. Trump controlled the party well enough to get the tariffs passed for a while. But when he got to the Supreme Court, the history of the Republican Party caught up with him. Three out of the six sitting conservative members of the court were good Republicans. I'm sure all six of them are. But three of them were good enough to realize that what Mr. Trump was doing was violating, undercutting, and dangerously threatening the reputation of a party that is supposedly for the common man or woman by holding back taxes. The party was going to now be stuck with the Trump history, if you like, of being a big tax maven. So they smashed him. They absolutely punched him right in the nose and took away the tariffs, which he now has to come up with verbal make-believe. Believe me, if the Supreme Court did what it did the first time around, he made the best case he could. Now he's going to stretch the logic of law, which you fellows know better than I anyway, even further to get a tariff going, and that's going to draw the Supreme Court's critical attention yet again. Now, finally, they were supposed to raise money. As you said in your introduction, the tariffs would raise so much money that we would all be better off and we wouldn't have to impose an income tax. Total crock. Don't think about it for more than 2 to 3 seconds because it's not worth your time. Let me explain. The tariffs imposed over this last year that have now been declared unconstitutional and will have to be refunded in part or toto raised, I'm going to be generous, $150 billion, maybe $170 billion. During the time that this money was raised, the president, and I'm just picking one item, indicated that the defense budget, excuse me, the war budget for this coming year will be raised from $900 billion to $1.5 trillion. And that was before declaring war on Iran, which will raise expenditures for war. Okay, that's an increase of $600 billion. The tariffs did not raise even a third of that, which means that this coming year, with or without the tariffs, we're going to have hundreds of billions of dollars of greater government borrowing than we have had in recent years, which have been record years of $1 trillion or more dollars of annual debt. Addition, deficits. There's no control here of the government budget. The promise to balance the budget, to get our finances back in order, which Mr. Trump said 100 times, he's just blown them to kingdom come. And let me remind you, that is before we take into account the declaration of a major new war. And finally, people should be clear, this is a different war from those the United States has fought. We've had 4 major wars in the last 70 years, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq. In each of those wars, the United States did not win. We fought to a stalemate, dividing Korea in half, North and South, ever since. In Vietnam, our enemy was the Communist Party of North Vietnam. That's who runs that country now. They won, the U.S. lost. in Afghanistan, the enemy was the Taliban. Who runs the country of Afghanistan today? The Taliban. They won, we lost. It's hard to say who's in charge in Iraq. It's a country split up many ways with lots of fighting going on. But one thing is clear. The U.S. didn't win. Okay, not only were these four big, fat losses, but they were with countries that were at the time among the poorest countries on earth. These were wars of the United States, one of the richest countries on earth, with the biggest military anybody has ever seen, in wars with four very poor countries, and the U.S. could not win. If you're a betting man or woman, take a look at this war. Iran is a country of 90 million people, way larger than those others, much richer than those others, much more developed industry, much more developed military, and with an immense long border with Russia, who can provide them with more missiles and howitzer shells than any other country on earth. This is a very different kettle of fish. You're not zipping in there, killing the Ayatollah, and then figuring everybody will look the other way. This is an enormously risky bet. The only country that's even riskier in this mess is Israel, because they run the risk of total obliteration. Not because others are going to come get them, because they have become the American servant in these things, and the whole world looks at them at that way. What a way to go into a future when the United States is in a decreasing capability of playing the role of an empire that it no longer can really preside over. We live in very interesting times, but they are excruciatingly painful and difficult and dangerous.
You're listening to Law and Disorder Radio. I'm Michael Smith. I'm here with my co-host, Jim Lafferty, and we're speaking with Professor Emeritus Richard Wolff on the state of the economy. Rick, there's a crisis of affordability in the USA. We all recognize this. New York City's Mayor Zohran Mamdani ran on a platform addressing this very issue. But Trump says, to the contrary, that prices are going down, especially fuel, electricity, and food. What is the real economic situation here today?
We had a serious inflation in the period of the pandemic, or more accurately, in the year or two after the worst of the pandemic had passed us. It got as high as 8 or 9%, and then it proceeded to decline. And most of the decline from the 9 or 8% to the 3 or 4% we have now was achieved, if you're going to be fair, under Mr. Biden. By the way, not because of Mr. Biden, but he was lucky. He came after the worst of it was over. The worst of it was the problem of, in a way, of Obama and in a way of Bush. But the reality is it was supposed to go down, if not to zero, then to 1, maybe 1.5%. It stopped doing that because of Trump. It stopped doing that because of what I told you before. The tariffs were a tax. They were paid by the American importing companies, but they passed a good number of them on to the general public. So our inflation didn't come down as much as the population wanted, as much as the population demanded, as much as the population voted for. And that can be put at the foot of the tariffs, and therefore that's the fault of Mr. Trump, because he decided to use tariffs in a way no president ever did before on a scale the way Mr. Trump did. But for just those reasons, since he's trying to hold on to the tariffs, and since we are at war with Venezuela, an oil producer, and now Iran, an oil producer, and now Iran, who sits on one of the major shipping routes, the Arabian Sea, the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz that Americans are learning about now, all of these things are going to raise the price of oil and gas. Or let me correct myself. The prices of oil and gas, natural gas, have already risen in the few days, the week, barely, that this war has been going on. Already the prices have gone up big, 10% or more, and they promise to do that in even greater size. So we are at the edge of what will be a resumption of rising prices, which will make the affordability conversation very acute. There's very little Mr. Trump can do, and even less that he's prepared to even try to do to cope with this. But it will take very dramatic measures. Someone like Mamdani, if, for example, he can come through with rent freezes and some of the other initiatives he's taken, then he will get the credit for really doing something about the affordability. But Mr. Trump talks about it, says a lot of things which are, I mean, I don't know how to say this politely, they are far from the truth. Prices are not coming down. They're not going to come down. If you raise the price of oil and gas, you're raising the price of everything, because everything either takes oil or gas to be made, or it takes it to be conveyed or transported to where we, in the end, use it. Whether that's the oil that is delivered to heat your home, or the gas that's delivered to fill the tank of your car, or whatever it is, it's oil that brings your food to the supermarket. And if it costs more to pay for that oil, which it already does, you're going to see rising prices as the people, the commercial folks, don't want to pick up the cost of all of that by themselves, just like the importers didn't want to pick up the cost of the tariff. Mr. Trump is doing something that may be good for the people at the top. Yes, they've gotten their taxes reduced. Yes, the stock market has been fine. But for the mass of people, no. They're the ones that are taking it on the chin. Poor jobs, insecure jobs, jobs with declining benefits, while the prices go up and the costs go up. And the signs of it are everywhere. The president has to say the opposite, because otherwise his would simply be yet another voice among the many that are saying we are in a declining economy. And by the way, the popular polls, the Gallup poll, the others, they all show that large majorities of the American people are upset. That's why the Democrats like the slogan of affordability. But the polls show that people are disaffected from the whole structure of our government. That's why they voted for someone kind of wild like Trump in the first place. That's in part why they voted for Mamdani. He was different. A Muslim socialist in the city of New York was something few thought was possible. But the disaffection with existing politics, and for good reason, leads people to want something else. Mamdani is going to try to do it. Trump didn't even try. Trump was all theater, no substance. All bravado, promising this, promising that. The golden age is upon us. It's going to be so profitable. For the people at the top, it has been. I always want to be fair. There are not only losers here.
Well, thank you,
WRCT Pittsburgh. Real vinyl.